The year was 1998 when Jennifer Page raced up the pop charts all around the world with the song Crush, and she went on to follow up Crush with the single Always You, and she's had several albums since then, and also played for the Pope at the Vatican. She's got some new stuff out. We'll talk about that and so much more right now as Jennifer Page joins us live via Skype. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing fantastic. So where are you living at these days? Are you like in Georgia, LA, or what's going on?
I'm in Nashville, actually, Nashville, Tennessee.
None of the above, then.
Yeah. I've hopped around over the years. Now I landed in Nashville.
Cool. And so you formed a band called The Fury. And from reading, how I understand it, I'm sure you're joking mostly, but, you know, a guy's been, you know, asking to be with him, play with him for years and years, and you finally kind of gave in and formed The Fury. Is that kind of how it happened?
That's funny. Well, I mean, not really. I met him through my brother, and we got together last year to do some writing. And when we wrote, I had to go out of town. I was doing a show or something on a weekend. And I said, hey, why don't you just quickly throw down some backgrounds and, you know, that'll be fine. They can mix it and get it all good to go. And when I came back and I heard what he had done, I was like, oh my gosh, this is beautiful. And our voices sounded so natural together, like we were siblings almost. So we said, let's get together and write. And then from there, we just kind of fell into a groove and we just started writing songs for both of us. At that time, we were just writing songs for me, as you know, he's a writer signed to Network. And so we're just writing for my record and we had so much fun. We just said, let's do this for real. So it kind of happened really naturally and just, he's a great guy and he's fun and stuff. So I've never been in a group situation and I didn't know if I would like it, but I really enjoy it a lot.
So tell us kind of a little bit more about him, you know, who he is, his background, all that kind of stuff.
His name's Corey Palermo and he like I said, he's signed to Network as a writer and as a songwriter, and he's an artist himself, and he's been kind of banging away, you know, all these years. And I just think he's so talented. He's never really, you know, gone huge or anything, but he's had a nice little career, and he's put out some dance records. And he's not a dance artist, but more moody dance art, you know, dance songs and stuff, where he's been a featured vocalist and that sort of thing. He's just really, really good. You guys should look him up online. He's really talented.
So two-part question then, where can we find you guys' stuff together? And then kind of tell us about your sound for those who haven't heard it yet.
It is very organic sounding. People who know my music will think, oh, it's probably really pop or something, but it's not. It's a lot more pop rock, more like inspired by the sound of like U2 and Coldplay and more moody kind of rock bands, and where vocals are really important. And we're both really vocalists. We both consider ourselves really like vocalists. So we have a very, it's really pretty actually. The music is cool. And the vocal kind of harmonies are really pretty. So it's easy. It's easy on the ears. You know, it's nice. And, I wouldn't call it easy listening or smooth. It's just, it's pretty. The vocals, parts and all that stuff are really pretty. So, we have a Facebook page under The Fury Music. We have a website called welcometothefury.com. So and also if you're friends with me on Facebook, there's all kinds of stuff where you can just link right to The Fury. So and right now actually on my page online, I'm telling people about this new Christmas single that we've just put out. So it'd be a good time to find it.
Which is that? That's not Silent Night, is it?
Yeah, Silent Night, and there's also a new one called Have Yourself a Merry Christmas. It's kind of based on Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Some of the same lyrics, but all new melodies, and we've kind of done our own version of it. So that's kind of what we've done so far, is we've taken kind of older songs, you know, classic songs, and made a whole new thing out of them.
Yeah, I heard the Silent Night. That's a great one, so that's cool.
Thank you.
So, okay, and then so the future of Jennifer Page then as a solo artist, you know, what do you see as that?
I'm working on some new stuff now. You know, I've had some crazy years, and I really kind of faded from the spotlight and just did a lot of film and television stuff. I sang, you know, a lot for advertising campaigns and different things like that, and just was more behind the scenes kind of vocalist and backgrounds for other artists, songwriter for other artists, things like that. But I, you know, been doing shows and stuff still, but I've been releasing records really just overseas. And I really miss singing. I miss singing live. You know, I miss, you know, the artist part of music. So I've started working on a new record, and it should be out next year. So there's a lot of new things in the works that are still a little bit under wraps. But if everything goes well, then next year will be a great year for me.
And you mentioned the advertising thing. Didn't you do like Jack in the Box? Because I think you and I might be colleagues because I endorsed them here.
Really? That's funny. Yes, I did. I did. I've done a couple commercials for them. The most recent one was something about a spicy chicken sandwich. I don't know. It was really, really country, and it was like over the top, hilarious.
Love it. We're talking to Jennifer Page right now. So let's go back. You were born and raised in Atlanta. The first question is, are you a big Braves fan?
I used to be. I used to be a huge fan before anybody else was. And remember that year that they went worst to first?
Hmm? Yep.
That's when I was such a fan. I was really young. I think I had just turned 16. And I remember my parents letting me go to the airport one day, like when they were coming in from another town or something. And I totally stalked the Braves. Like, what was wrong with me? And what was wrong with my parents for letting me? Not cool.
Did you have a thing for, wasn't Chipper Jones and Dave Justice and Javi Lopez? Did you have a crush on one of those three? It seemed like
I really liked Lemke. I remember liking Lemke because like he was so the underdog. I don't know why. I don't think I had a crush on him, but I really liked him. You know, he was my favorite.
Oh, that's great. So the story then at age five, supposedly, this is off your Wikipedia, so who knows if it's accurate, but so you begin singing coffee houses, your older brother Chance. Is that true? And then, you know, what do you remember about that?
Yeah, totally. My brother's really talented. He's still a musician today, producer, you know, singer. He's kind of well-rounded as a musician. And he's a little bit older than me. And really, the truth was I was just so competitive. My brother kind of fell into music, and then I saw all the attention he was getting, and I really needed to have some of that. So I started learning to sing, too. And so at first, I would just sing kind of backgrounds and whatever. We'd do little duets together, and then I started branching off on my own. My parents were really supportive, and they would just let us – they would, you know, they were really hard on us. They would say – we would come down and perform for them, and they'd be like, nope, not quite yet, you know, and then they'd send us up to our rooms and whatever, and then we did, like, little local contests and stuff. They weren't stage-crazy parents, but they were really supportive, and they really encouraged us for sure.
And then you studied voice, dance, drama, a well-known performing arts high school there in Atlanta.
We did, yeah.
What were your goals at that time? Did you want to be a singer? Did you want to act, you know, at that time?
Yeah, my dad was crazy. He would have us, like, sit down when we were, like, 15, 14. He was, like, a businessman. And he would sit us down with, like, Anthony Robbins books, like those questionnaires, you know, and like, what are your goals? And we would totally fill them out. And so my dad was like, okay, what are your specific goals? Like, okay, I want to be a singer. I want to work with this person. I want to do that. And so as funny as it sounds to me now, like, it totally helped. It was really good because I really knew at an early age what I really wanted to do. And I always wanted to do music. And he told me, like, yeah, wanting to do music is great, but, like, how are you going to do music? And so, you know, I moved to California really early on. First, I went on the road with a band. I mean, really bad things could have happened to me. I got so lucky. I mean, I had a really nice, you know, it was a slow build, and I really learned the ropes before I had success with my first single. So it was really good for me. I'd already been on stage for years at such an early age.
And you mentioned that band. I'm sure you're talking about Vivid Image, right?
Yes, sir. That's right.
You feel like I'm ghostwriting your bio here with all the quiz.
Yes. Good man. You know so much.
So you're 17 years old. You guys tour the country. It's a top 40 covers act, for those who don't know Vivid Image. So how'd you become involved with that? And what are your favorite memories of that time?
I auditioned for a local place in Atlanta to perform, but they told me I was too young. And so I didn't get the job. I think I was like 16 or 17 years old. And it was like, I'd never even been to a bar, but this was, you know, the singer for a bar. And so they're like, honey, no, you're too young. No, no. So, but there happened to be this guy that was also auditioning. And he was like, hey, I've got friends who, who need a singer. You know, it's a road band, but would you be into that? And so I auditioned and I got that job. And I was definitely 17. My parents wouldn't let me go at 16, but I was 17 for sure. And I had already graduated high school and that whole thing. So I went on the road.
Always been the overachiever, Miss Page, right?
I guess. Either that or just young and dumb. I don't know.
So then, okay, you mentioned in a second that you moved out to LA after that then. So what were you doing when you first got out there? Were you just, I mean, did you have normal jobs during the day? You were singing at night, or how'd that work?
You know, I got really lucky. I moved to town. I really didn't have any money saved or anything, but I think I had $1,000 and I knew one person and she was an actress and she knew a few people. She knew a lot of people, but she knew a few musicians. And, she introduced me to one guy who ended up being the producer that I wrote that we worked with, we did Crush with. So, it was just one of those things that I just kind of fell into singing demos for a lot of the hit songwriters in town. And, I made up a demo tape and I just started sending it out to anybody and everybody who would listen. And that's really how I got my start was learning, you know, who was doing what and sending out my demo tape to those people. And I ended up writing with a lot of those same people that I used to sing demos for.
And then, well, before we talk about that, the Olympics, 1996, you got to go back to Atlanta in front of 50,000 people and perform. How sweet was that? Pretty cool.
That was really cool. It was like a kind of like a coming home party. You know, I had moved to California a couple years previous, and it was like such a sweet way to come home and be like, ha ha, I've done it. Yes. You know, it was great.
And then, so after the Olympics, Andy Goldmark, you redid Aretha Franklin, Chains of Fools. So, is this how this works? So the song caught the attention of some dude over in Germany, like a German record label, and you got signed? Is that pretty much the truth? Or
totally, yeah. It just, you know, it was released independently, and it started getting a little bit action. And then, yeah, it got the attention of this company called Adel. And they came over, we met, and that led to my record deal.
So when they signed you then, was the original plan then to just work you overseas or also in the U.S., or what was kind of the plan of attack at that point?
They had just signed, they had just opened a New York office from their German company. And so I think I was like their flagship kind of artist that they were going to try and break. And actually what happened was I had a party and I was like, all my friends had come over and they really just played Crush over and over and over again. And I knew that people my age liked that song. And so all of the kind of record executives and everybody, they were like, no, this song is, it's not, you know, it's not a hit or whatever. And I begged them to release it. And, they did. I can't believe they did. But they gave it a shot at radio. And then, of course, it started doing really well. And it started in the U.S. and then it kind of trickled over to all the different countries overseas.
So is the story true then that you're out in L.A., you know, you get Crush recorded and then Kiss FM, obviously famous, you know, Rick Dees was there, Ryan Seacrest. And then all of a sudden they throw it on and you don't even have like the CDs printed yet. You don't have any T-shirts. I mean, it's all just real raw and they started playing it. Is that how it happened?
It's totally how it happened. I mean, it was really, now having been in the business for so many years, I look back on that time and I'm like, I remember people saying it just doesn't happen like this. But in my mind, it always was supposed to happen like that for me, that I would move to California, that I would meet the producers, that I would work on a record and that, you know, I would be on the radio. That was my dream. So I thought, yeah, that's how it happens. But now like knowing how, fickle the business is and how hard it can be. You know, I look back and I'm like, wow, that was like a little dream. You know, it really doesn't happen like that. It was a very natural process.
Well, especially at Kiss in LA. How did that happen? I'm a longtime radio guy. How did that happen?
Yeah. They liked the song. It was just a friend of a friend played it for them and they loved the song and they were the first people to play it. So, you know how it is. A lot of times when the big stations play a song, then the little stations will be more likely to play it. So for me, it was like, it's the biggest, like, I don't know, endorsement, I guess you could say. So they really got behind it. They did a lot of interviews with me and I did some shows for them and that sort of thing. So it was a great way to start.
So the first time you heard it on the radio in LA then?
Say again, sorry?
The first time you heard it on the radio then, were you actually in LA?
I was.
You remember that moment? Was it exciting?
I totally remember that moment. It was so exciting. I remember calling my parents as it was playing over the speakers and freaking out on the phone with them.
I bet. So during the whole time Crush was out, you're out and about touring. What are your kind of favorite memories when you look back at that time? Because it had to have been almost, I would think, tough to soak in, you know, the moment, right? Because it happened so quick.
Completely. It was very surreal. I just remember getting a call like, you know, quickly like, hey, do you want to be on, you know, Regis and Kathy Lee or Kelly or whatever. And I freaked out because, you know, like that kind of stuff was just so brand new. And that was the first television show I did. And all that kind of stuff was just, it was mind blowing. It really was. And I just was so terrified, like during those first things. And now those things don't scare me, but I just remember, you know, that feeling of being like, oh my gosh, you know, I could hardly catch my breath.
And then what do you remember about, where'd you guys shoot that music video? What do you remember about the day of doing that? Was that fun?
Which one? Which music? Oh, Crush?
Yeah, Crush, yep.
It was in California, and there's a part in the video where I'm like actually swinging over the ocean, and, you know, like it was a really great director. David Hogan is his name, and he had done like that beautiful Shania Twain video. I can't remember the name of the still the one. Remember how beautiful that video was, the black and white video. He had done that, so I fell in love with that video, and he did Crush for us as well. And it was just really, it was an exciting time. Just everything was so new. I'd never done a video. I'd never really been in front of a real camera in that kind of way. So it was just very exciting.
And how did this get lined up? So I think it was like a year later, maybe shortly after that, but you play for the Pope at the Vatican. How did that happen?
I was chosen to be like the artist of my generation. They were doing this Christmas concert there. And so a lot of really legendary people were there, you know, from Tom Jones to, I can't remember all the people now, but it was a lot of really huge people, way more famous than me. But they chose me to be like the person that represented my generation for this Christmas concert. So it was really a huge honor, and I got to meet the Pope, and he blessed me and everything else. So it was really awesome.
And then you must have been, I'm assuming, pretty excited 2009 when Lea Michele covered Crush on Glee. What'd you think of that?
That was pretty cool. It was awesome. I mean, the truth is that, you know, the song has been so cut. It's been had such a life, and it's gotten to do so many things. It's like has a life of its own. It's just another little another notch in its belt in a way. It's just so cool, you know.
Yeah,
it's great that the song has had such a staying power. That's, I think, for me, the best part.
Always Use, another song I want to talk about off that album. Kind of tell us the story how you guys came up with that song.
Well, it was, you know, it's just, I'm really into melodies. So when I'm writing, I always sing the melodies first. And that song was not always, but usually, and that song was no different. It was just written really around the chorus melody. And, I knew that I wanted it to be really simple and make sure that the story was more told in the verses. And then the chorus would be really simple. And that's just kind of how that started. And it was just a easy process writing that with J.D. Martin and Andy Goldmark.
This next comment kind of pains me to admit because it's pathetic, but I love the movie Autumn in New York.
Oh, no.
Didn't you have a song on that soundtrack too?
I did. There's a song called Beautiful on there. That is so funny that you love that movie.
Dude, that's you know, Richard Gere's a pimp, you know?
Yeah, totally. He is.
So, okay, the second album was 2001, Positively Somewhere. Stranded was a great song on that one. And I've also thought that should have been a bigger song here in the U.S., but, you know, whatever. But what are kind of your thoughts on that second album and that time era?
It was just so unfortunate because I had really worked hard on this record. Like, I was so excited because, you know, my first record was really made in a basement, and it was made with one producer. And, you know, it was just kind of like, hey, you want to make a record? It was really like that. I didn't even have a deal. I was just making the record. And then I got the deal when they heard, you know, different songs from the record. So I kind of had to prove myself. And then, of course, Crush helped me get the American label Hollywood Records to get on board as well. Well, this one, I was really working more with Hollywood Records and, of course, all their incredible talent, like connections with the biggest producers of our time, you know. And so I was working with a lot of really hit makers and I worked with, you know, people, all different kinds of producers. So it was a great learning time for me. And I felt really proud of that record. And unfortunately, it came out the week of September 11th. So it really never saw the light of day.
Oh, yeah, that was bad timing.
Yeah, terrible timing. And I mean, it did come out overseas at different times. So I mean, it was a lot easier overseas to get it heard. But here, the song that was released was called These Days, and it was all about how life is good right now, everything's great. And it was totally going up the charts. But then when that happened, of course, the radio programming froze, and it was so inappropriate for the time. It was just totally inappropriate. So my record just went away, and unfortunately. But I'm really proud of that second record.
So then shortly after that second album, you had a greatest hits collection, and then it kind of was made public that you were no longer with either record label. Was that kind of a tough time, more of an empowering time, or kind of both?
Like first it was tough and then it was empowering, you know? So, at first I really didn't know what to do because I've always made records. I've always been a singer. I didn't feel I could go backwards and just do, you know, sing demos for producers anymore. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to have an artist career anymore. So it was like definitely a time where I had to find my own strength and kind of dig deeper. And I just started working on, more music for myself, and eventually that music was signed and it came out overseas. So I've kind of proven to myself at this point that if I do the work, then the opportunity always comes. But it usually doesn't happen the other way around. Like nobody is banging on our doors saying like, please, please, please work with me. You know, it just usually doesn't happen that way. It's almost, and especially now with the way the music business is, you've kind of got to prove yourself again and again and again and again.
By the way, I got to give you some mad props for rocking the pigtails on that Flowers album cover.
That's funny. Yeah, I've always been one to take the hair and run with it and do whatever it wants to do.
Southern class. That's what I like.
There you go.
That's talking right. To Jennifer Page. So 2006, really, really powerful song. My favorite song you've ever done was for, it makes sense, I like this one, from the Lifetime movie, The Calling. Augusta Gone from that. But anyway.
Yeah, cool. Good.
So, was that a good movie? I never even saw that movie. Was it pretty good on Lifetime there?
I'm going to say yes. Yeah. I don't know, but I'm going to say yes.
You never watched it?
I didn't. Isn't that awful?
Your song's in it. How can you not watch it?
I know. I just never saw it. I don't know how to see it.
Oh, well,
you know, it's on television. I guess I need to DVR it or something. I don't know.
There you go. But seriously, The Calling, I think, is your best song. So tell me if I'm right on this. Is it kind of the story of like longing for something better, but then you kind of hold on to your current relationship to kind of to delay the inevitable of, you know, things ending? Is that pretty much what that song's about?
Nailed it.
Really?
That's exactly what it's about. Yeah.
You're like, I got nothing to add on that one. Good job.
That's it. You nailed it.
Okay. So then 2008, Best Kept Secret came out, and then a whole bunch of women around the world hated you because on the re-release in 2009, you got to be in bed for a promo photo shoot with Nick Carter, right?
That sounds really dirty.
Well, it's true, though.
How about let's just say I did a duet with Nick Carter instead of saying I'm in bed with him?
Well, no, like wasn't on the single, like the picture, I think, wasn't it?
No, I'm teasing you. Yes, we did. We were in a hotel suite taking like promo shots and stuff. And the photographer did like suggest, hey, why don't you guys lie on the bed, which was fairly awkward. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, but it's Nick Carter from the Backstreet Boys. That's like every woman's dream, isn't it?
I think it is. I think you're right.
Yeah. All right. So kind of tell us one more time here about The Fury and Jennifer Page. Kind of tell us the future for both and how we can keep up with you and everything.
Okay. So probably, early next year. Well, right now go to jenniferpage.com and it'll link you to a lot of different things that I'm doing. That's probably the easiest way. Or if you're on Facebook, you know, you can do / Jennifer Page Music, and that's also a way to connect, but that will link you to The Fury, which is also on Facebook. And then right now, The Fury, has a couple Christmas songs out, which we'll definitely introduce you to our sound and to what we're going to be releasing as our debut record early next year. So, yeah, there's a lot of things in the works, and keep your fingers crossed for me. I'm totally keeping my fingers crossed that some of the things that are in the works will come through. And if so, then I'll have something out early next year, and you'll be seeing a lot more of me. So fingers crossed.
Cool. Anything else in the future that you see yourself doing besides music? I mean, do you write or anything or anything else?
Do you mean songwrite?
Yeah. Or anything.
Yeah, I do. I do a lot of songwriting for myself and for other artists. And you know, I still do the advertising campaigns and stuff. I still am the voice of a lot of commercials you might see. And so I love writing. I love singing and I love performing. So pretty much anything that I can get my hands on as far as that goes, you know, I'll be doing it. But as an artist, I'll be releasing a solo record and a record with the Fury next year. So I'm really excited about that.
Well, thanks so much for all your time. We're excited to hear both the Fury and your new record here in 2012. And definitely we got to stay in touch and, you know, keep me updated with everything.
Absolutely. Will do. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.